Good morning, and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 61st episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeKnitting.com, your source for great knitting patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to AllFreeKnitting.com to get in on the fun. I want to welcome the new listeners today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. We do have another sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored by Jimmy Beans Wool. You can get the new free gift guide catalog at jimmybeanswool.com. There are gifts for those who love to knit shawls and hats, for those who love to stay warm, for those who are celebrating a birthday or an anniversary, or for anyone who simply loves yarn. Visit jimmybeanswool.com for the free catalog and other great yarn items. Before we get to our scheduled guest today, we have two Fiber Hooligan alumni who have dropped into our virtual studio. They've got some things planned for Stitches Midwest, which is happening later this week, and it concerns Halos of Hope. And when it concerns Halos of Hope, I always make the time on the program. Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce them. This morning, we have Betsy Hirschberg with us, past alumni of Fiber Hooligan, the author of Betsy Beads, and one of our fantastic teachers. Good morning, Betsy, and welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Benjamin. It's always nice to be with you.
It's great to have you back. And thanks for taking the time to jump in here and tell us what you're doing for Halos of Hope. And we'll get to that just in a minute. I just want to make sure that we introduce our other guest, another past Fiber Hooligan alumni, the very talented and vivacious Kelly Lelos from Namaste Inc. is with us. You probably remember her from a show we did last year. She has got something kind of new going on. Good morning, Kelly, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Ladies, thank you so much again for being on the show. I know this is very last minute. As Betsy knows, I tend to be more of a planner than this, but...
man after my own heart.
Yes, yeah, yes, yes. I tried the whole not planning and living, like, you know, spur of the moment thing, and that didn't work out very well for me. And Betsy told me that wasn't going to work out for me.
No, not so much.
Not so much. See, I plan in lieu of actually being creative, unlike the two of you who are creative. So we're planners.
They're not mutually exclusive.
I'm not a planner. I must admit, I'm not a planner. So I'm unable to plan. I'm just one or the other.
Well, that's okay. We got a left brain and a right brain person on the show today. That's a fantastic thing.
On opposite coasts.
On opposite coasts, yes. One of you is joining us from the East Coast, one of you is joining us from the West Coast, and so we've had to bridge the time zone gap, and I'm sitting right here in the middle. And again, I wanted to thank you. This is kind of a cool thing. We're not going to get into a huge history of you guys, and for Fiber Hooligan listeners that want to learn more about Betsy or Kelly, I encourage you to please jump back. They have both been guests on the show before, and their stories are great. We're not here to talk about them today. We're here to talk about what they are doing in conjunction with Halos of Hope to support Halos of Hope. So I'm going to start with you, Kelly, because this just came into my field of vision. And so let's talk about what happened and what you folks are doing to support Halos of Hope, and you're kicking it off at Stitches Midwest.
Well, we're really excited to announce that we've teamed up with Halos of Hope for the first time. I think it was at a past Stitches event that you introduced me to Pam, and that sort of started the whole idea that how could we get involved with this awesome cause. And one of our most popular products are Oh Snap pouches. They're mesh project pouches, and what we've done is used the Halos of Hope logo per Pam's permission and We've made a special edition Oh Snap pouch, which we're donating 5% of all proceeds to the Halos of Hope cause. The neat thing about working with Pam was that I said, well, Pam, what color do you want if I made you a Halos of Hope Oh Snap pouch? And she said, something blue because it's calming, nothing red because it would remind me of the medicines that I used to have to take, which I thought was really interesting and insightful. So my first pass, we got a Dodger blue, and second pass, we got sort of a calming blue, which made it. And so we're both really happy with the color and the results.
Well, that's great. And I've seen the pictures finally. Our mutual friend Jocelyn sent me pictures of the Halos of Hope O-Snap bags. It's just wonderful to see the little Halos of Hope logo on the inside of the bags. And it's a very pretty bag, very pretty color. Your bags are so hot. People track you down and they love your stuff. As you know, my whole staff tends to be addicted to your products. And somehow I end up actually buying bags for some of my staff too. So I have a feeling this whole thing that you're doing for Halos of Hope is going to end up costing me money.
You're welcome. But all towards a good cause, Benjamin. All towards a good cause. So.
It is all toward a good cause. Well, you don't have to convince me about Halos of Hope. Absolutely not. No, it's really great that you're doing this. It's great that you took the time, because I know you guys spent a lot of time with design and working things out so that the product you come out is the best possible product. I think I've compared you to being the sort of Apple Inc. of the bag market.
Well, thank you. That's a really nice thing to say.
Well, you guys do a great job, and your presentation is great. And correct me if I'm wrong, you are premiering these at Stitches Midwest, is that correct?
Yeah, to, you know, sort of see how what the response is to them. Hopefully people get as excited about them as we are to bring them, but we haven't shown them to the public yet, so it will be their premiere debut at the show next weekend.
Oh, that's fantastic. And again, thank you so much for that. I'm very excited about this, not just as a Halos of Hope person myself, but it's just wonderful to have you, such an energetic company, teaming up with Halos of Hope and then premiering a cool product like that at our show. So again, thank you very much on many levels.
Absolutely, and thank you.
All right, so let's move on to the other part of our dynamic duo this morning. And of course, So of course I'm talking about my girl, Betsy Hirschberg. She's my girl. So Betsy, this is a long story. I'm going to ask you to spend a little bit more time talking about this for people that may not have heard this. There is a raffle, but before we get to the raffle, there is a piece, and the piece is a scarf you did. And I'd love for you to tell our listeners, if you would, kind of the history of this piece before we move into what's happening.
I'd be happy to. And calling me your girl just made my day. And that's saying a lot, because today's my wedding anniversary. So this is
okay, congratulations.
Day. So I had been, I love coming to Stitches, you know that, and watching how Halos of Hope, learning what they do through you and through the work that they exhibit at Halos of Hope and the kinds of events and promotions that they've done there just was so inspiring. Watching what Drew Imborski did for Halos of Hope and having Pam put out a call for designers to help with patterns for the cause was so inspiring, but I felt so incapable of helping. I don't make hats. You know, I put beads on everything, and somehow they just didn't seem to mesh very well. So I really struggled with some way to help support this cause, which I feel very close to because my husband's sister died of breast cancer. And several years ago, I had designed a scarf that was part of a competition, if you will, for knitting design. And I had tried in the past to donate that pattern, make it available to people who wanted to knit it. And so the first thing I did with Halos of Hope was take the pattern for that breast cancer awareness scarf and make that available to Halos of Hope to sell to raise money for the cause. And so I was really pleased to do that. But then I kept seeing everybody else continue to do wonderful things. And I wanted to do something that was new and fresh and really related to the work that Halos does, because I am so impressed with Pam and all of her volunteers and the way she makes it possible for knitters everywhere to be part of what she does. And for all of us, no matter how much or how little time or money or support we can give, can make a difference. just, as she likes to say, one hat makes a difference, you know, to a person. This is all about connection, connecting people with people who care and people who want to be of support to people who are going through trying times. So that's a very inspirational cause. How anyone could not get behind what she does is a mystery to me. So I came up with the idea of creating a scarf, a second scarf, that would celebrate what I feel it is that Pam gives to cancer patients, and that is hope. I mean, she gives people hope with these hats that she sends out, that people know that people care about them. So I designed a scarf that I've called the Celebration of Hope Scarf. It's not a pattern that people could easily replicate. I wanted to do something that was one of a kind and that she could then turn around and use as a fundraising idea. So I don't know if you want to talk about the raffle or you want me to. But anyway, I've created this scarf that includes a lot of bead knitting and something I call beaded calligraphy, which is basically using beads to spell out words that I feel that Pam and her cause inspire in other people. And those words are joy and hope and love and life. And so they all appear on the scarf along with some bead knitted kind of floral shapes, little flowers that are appliqued on it, because I feel like flowers indicate growth and nurturing and what we all hope for anybody that we know who is going through a cancer situation, and that is renewal. You know, that there, if we all plant seeds and we all support, that there will be growth and there will be hope and joy and love and life for anyone who's going through this. So we're going to raffle it off at Stitches Midwest, and I hope it's going to be a successful raffle. And if you see me walking around Midwest, I'm going to try to wear the scarf as much as possible to show it to people and also, obviously, to sell raffle tickets. I believe there is a form in the show book at Midwest that people can fill out with their raffle tickets, and it's a $5 donation per raffle ticket. And that gives you a chance to win a scarf. And I think people can put in as many raffle tickets as they care to, drop them off at Pam's booth. I don't know the number offhand of the booth. Benjamin, do you?
You bet. Halos of Hope is in booth 419 in the Stitches Midwest Market.
And so there'll be lots of opportunities for people to buy raffle tickets and support Halos in this way. And then on Sunday at noon, I believe there will be a drawing and the winner will be selected. And the winner does not have to be present. So don't worry about that. Go ahead and buy your raffle tickets. And if you're the winner, you'll be notified. And this, what I think is a very special scarf, will be yours.
Yes. And a couple of things I wanted to say about that. First, kind of an emotional response. This is very generous of you. I know that this scarf and scarf pattern was extremely personal for you. It's based on your loss. For you to donate it and then to go through and build us kind of another one that we could use in this manner, it touched Pam and I quite a bit. So I wanted to say thank you so much for doing that.
Benjamin, it has totally been my pleasure. I really feel like when Pam gives people the opportunity to donate like this, everybody benefits. I mean, it feels so good to do something like this. It was such a joy for me to work on this and to make it and to complete it and then to be able to give it. I mean, it's almost embarrassing how much pleasure you get from doing things like this. No, really.
I absolutely know the feeling.
Yep, exactly. So no one needs to thank me. This was totally my pleasure, and I'm so pleased that I've been given the opportunity to do this.
And one of the things that I know is that the beautiful scarf, one of the times that you won't be wearing it, will be during the fashion show, because I know it's going to be coming out on one of the models, and I'm sure it'll be a big success. You're one of the people that organizes the fashion show behind the scenes and dresses the models, Betsy. I almost feel like I should pull you out when that happens.
No. Oh, no. We all scramble to be able to do that. We have so much fun backstage dressing the models. No way. They did that when my book came out. They made me go sit in the audience, but I wouldn't give up working with my teacher friends for anything. But thank you for offering.
Well, thank you for kind of summarizing that. I also find Pam infectious. And,
yes.
You know, when I'm around her, I feel the need to do more. And when I find myself getting busy or find myself being distracted and not giving Halo's Hope the time it needs, I make a phone call to her and talk to her for a little bit. She never fails to motivate.
Yes.
There is just something about her that is profound in the way that she affects you. Wouldn't you agree, Kelly?
Well, she's got an energy that's really just, it radiates, and it's something that you want to be around. And I mean, the first time I met her, I thought to myself, how can we get involved with this? Because this is good stuff here, you know? And she's just got this magnetic personality, and her smile is, I don't know what it is about her. I can only describe it as an energy, but it just makes you want to be a part of the good things that she's doing.
I totally agree with you. And it's in such an understated way. I mean, you know, people who run nonprofits and do the work, you know, sometimes have to be very aggressive. Otherwise, they don't get their work done. And that's not the case with Pam. Pam, as you said, she draws you in, and there's a positivity about her that makes you want to help, you know, without being having your arm twisted. She's just inspirational.
I mean, she didn't even
inspirational
ask. She didn't
person.
Even ask. Yeah, it's probably the same for you. It's just, she doesn't ask. You just meet her, you hear about her cause, and you think that, you know, well, then
what can I do?
A good point. Exactly. What can I do?
What can I do?
When I reached out to her, she was sort of shocked and a little bit.
I know.
Like, oh, gee, that'd be so cool. You know, wow.
You seem so surprised that people
thing.
Would want to be. You know, to help with what she's doing. And that's just even that much more inspiring.
Absolutely.
Well, fantastic. I'm glad you guys had that little exchange there, because that was good. I liked hearing that, because I feel the same way. And, you know, she is so humble, and she's so grateful. I mean, and I love the fact that she's grateful and unassuming. You know, of course, Betsy, she's a huge fan of yours. She got into Beat Mania when you were going through your thing, and you know, which was just, I think, starstruck.
I warn everybody. You know, warn people.
Well, yeah, you're a dealer. You are. First one's for free.
I always tell my students that when they leave class, that's fine for them now to call me their dealer.
Right. Yeah, you're a dealer. And Kelly, she's always been a big fan of your bags, some of the best bags on the market. And when you guys decided to get involved again, she was starstruck. And it's funny. I think that a lot of times people are kind of starstruck by her, which always, I think, makes her feel like, really? I don't think she's always aware of just how charismatic she truly is.
I have a question for Kelly. I am a huge fan of your bags as well, so I'm wondering if I can put in an order to reserve some Halos of Hope snap bags to pick up when I come to Midwest.
Stop by. I'll just give you one, but I want a picture of that beautiful scarf, and we can couple it with the Halos of Hope. And
oh, that would be
great.
You should definitely do that. But
that would be great, because I'm
dying
to
bag for me. I'll be there.
I promise I will. Now, they come in a set of 3, small, medium, large, or set of 2, large, XL, double XL.
Oh, go big or go home. Let's do the 3.
Go big or go home, girl. Okay,
right.
I love it. I'll save you one. I'll make sure we don't run out of
Okay, that'd be great.
On one of them. You got
Perfect.
It.
Thank you, Kelly.
Sure, my pleasure.
Well, ladies, I've tied you up a good long time, and I need to get to our regularly scheduled guest today. I want to thank you again for finding the time to join us last minute and to let us know what you're going to be doing at Stitches Midwest, and also just for being angels. Halos of Hope needs all the angels it can get, and you two just joined the ranks. So thank you very much for everything you do, and I can't wait to have you both back on the show at some future date.
Okay. Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you, Kelly.
Likewise, Benjamin. Thank you, Betsy. This has been great. And yeah, we love seeing everybody at the show, so we're really looking forward to it.
Yep, we'll all be together soon.
Yep, that's right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
I just want to make a quick addition to the last segment. We forgot to thank Webb's, America's Yarn Store, for donating the yarn for Betsy's scarf. The scarf was done in Valley Yarn's 5-2 bamboo, which is 100% bamboo, and 210 merino tencel, which is 50% and 50%. So again, thank you for your support, Webs. We really do appreciate it. Okay, this week my scheduled guest is a very talented designer, knitter, crocheter, weaver, and all-around great guy. For the last 14 years, he has been the editor of Knitters Magazine. After 60 episodes of Fiber Hooligan, he's back with us to talk about the upcoming fall 2014 issue of Knitters Magazine. a little bit about a new book from XRX Books written by Judith Shangold, as well as some of his thoughts and stories about Stitch's expos. He is one of the smartest and most creative people in the fiber arts world. Of course, I'm speaking of my friend and Stitch's co-host, Rick Mondragon. Rick joins us this morning from XRX Inc. offices in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Good morning, Rick, and welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ben. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
You know, it's funny. We're here in South Dakota, and I don't think I've seen you in like 3 or 4 weeks now.
That's because I'm hiding under a rock. Well, maybe under a book, maybe under a magazine. I don't know.
I think it might be under a book and a magazine. Yeah, you've been a very busy boy. We'll get to that in a little bit. But have you managed to have any fun all this summer?
A little bit. I got a couple of vacations in, and I got a new car. What more could I ask for?
You got a new car?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You didn't?
Oh, you know, I'm out here under a rock. You know that.
Oh, shucks. Maybe I should say, I want a new car. Can I have a raise?
For fiber hooligans that need to understand the way it works, I tend to work almost exclusively from home on my projects and then just go into the office and meet with the staff when they need me, which, you know, fortunately for them isn't often. And so Rick and I see each other probably once, maybe twice a week, usually, but I've been on vacation, he's been on vacation, and so we haven't seen each other for a while. Yeah, but new car. I saw that you went on vacation, but new car. See, now that I'm not on Facebook, I miss everything, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you get?
I got a Mustang.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it, what color?
A red convertible.
A red Mustang convertible. That is just killer. See?
Yeah.
See, you know, that's just sounds a whole lot more appealing than, you know, the red minivan that we have.
Yeah, well, I don't have kids. So.
Yeah, well, and sometimes that sounds more appealing too, so, but we won't go there right now.
Yeah, we all make our choices, I guess.
Yes, we all make our choices. That is absolutely.
Hopefully the car can take care of me when I'm in the rest home.
Well, having kids is no guarantee that they're going to take care of you either. Yeah, I'm just making a statement, man. So you've been really busy, and we're going to get to everything you've been doing because lots of exciting stuff coming out of the editorial department at XRX. But we need to get into this interview, and it's been 60 episodes since you've been on. Can you believe that?
No. Wow.
I know. I've been just negligent, haven't I?
Yeah. No.
No, it's amazing. You were my second guest right after Debbie, and we have not managed to get, I mean, I have not managed to get my act together to have you back on, which is just terrible because we've done a lot of cool stuff between then and now. It's been almost a year and a half since you've been on the show, which is just crazy. So considering we have some new followers and some new listeners that maybe didn't tune into the very, very early shows, I thought I'd ask you kind of a boilerplate question, Rick, and let people get to know you. Okay. Rick Mondragon, who are you and where did you come from?
I'm the editor of Knitters Magazine at the moment. Have been for 14 years. I came to the editorship first through teaching through Stitches. I taught for you guys probably for about 10, 12 years before I started doing styling for the magazine. And from stylist, I graduated into editor. And where did I come from? I used to live in Albuquerque. I lived in Albuquerque for 20 years. Prior to that, I was born and raised in Colorado and went to school in Colorado as well. So after graduation from college, I moved to Santa Fe and then on to Albuquerque and lived there for 20 years. And I've been here for 14. So that means I have to be at least 34 years old, right?
Just 34, I think. As I recall, that you just turned 34 this year, right?
One more time.
One more time. Everybody should do 34 at least twice, if not three times, don't you think?
Right.
Okay. Well, we won't get into age because I'm feeling old these days, but that's a whole other conversation. Again, I remember, of course, meeting you at Stitches, and I remember you being involved in the magazine. You had an Afghan square in one of our early Afghan books. I remember that.
Yes.
I remember, of course, that you were with us to help style the photo shoots when Nancy Thomas was the editor for Knitters Magazine.
Right. Yeah. The last 2 years that she was editor, I was the stylist.
And so when Nancy came to retire, it was just, it was really a very natural choice to bring you on board. You knew us, you knew, you understood what we did, and we had already knew that we worked well together. So I think it was, you know, a beautiful thing and a lucky thing that we got you. And thanks for sticking around 14 years, because as you know, we're not the easiest bunch to work with.
No comment.
No comment.
Oh, we have our moments, but then I'm not the easiest to work with either. So.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's kind of your history, and I appreciate you giving us the elevator speech on that. And you are an incredibly talented designer. And it's funny, every so often I will run into your designs out in the world when you were a freelancer. And it's very funny to me. One of my dearest friends, Jeannie Randolph, I remember being in her booth at Stitches, and she had a lovely pattern by this designer named Rick Mondragon, and it was a crochet piece.
Yeah, it was done, yeah, for the people who owned Fiesta before Jeannie.
Yeah.
I had done a bit of work for Fiesta for the prior two owners, actually. And that was about the only real freelance work I did for as designs for yarn companies. Prior to that, I just did a lot of arts and crafts show knits and sold my work through the arts and crafts circuit.
I just found it interesting. It was crochet. I mean, there you are. You're the editor of Knitters Magazine. I mean, what's more knit-centric than a magazine called Knitters Magazine? And often people may or may not know this, but you are a heck of a crocheter. You were a member of the Crochet Guild of America. You were a board member. I mean, this is just something that's very cool. And of course, you know, all of us that came from the yarn store, the Golden Fleece, everybody was, you know, knitting, crocheting, doing everything. And what people may or may not know about you is that you also do all that stuff. I mean, you will do quilting, you will do crochet, you will do knitting, you will do, and I think you've caught the weaving bug too.
Yes, I caught the weaving bug as well as everything else. I've been weaving for many, many years as well. I started out as a crocheter when I was really young. My mother taught me how. In high school, I taught myself to knit. And then when I lived in Albuquerque, there was a great weaving shop, and it was a commercial weaving shop in that they wove things for commercial purposes, not for hobbyists. And they wanted to move into the knitting world, and they actually hired me as their on-site knitting expert, kind of. And really, it wasn't that I was so much an expert, but I at least knew how to talk knitting and get things done for them in the knitting world. And so as I was giving them my opinions and my expertise on knitting, they were teaching me how to become a weaver. And so I've been weaving probably for, well, 25, 27 years. Not steady, but I kind of know my weaving stuff a little bit.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you're a good weaver. I've seen your stuff. You're a very good weaver. And since we're talking about weaving, let's move into the project that has been all-consuming in the editorial department for the past few months. I'm talking about, of course, our brand new book with Judith Shangold. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the book before you talk about the process and how involved it is.
Okay, the book is called Weave, Knit, Wear, and it's a combination of mainly weaving, but with some knitting accents on the woven pieces. It's all done on a rigid heddle loom. Judith Shangold, if you know who she is or don't know who she is, she used to be the importer for Monostel Uruguay, but she was a weaver before that. She's been a yarn shop owner. She has been a designer for many, many years. And in this whole new resurgence of the rigid heddle loom, she fell in love with it, and she approached us about doing a book with simple but elegant woven garments with knit accents. And we've been working on it for about 3 or 4 years now, and it's at the printers, and it should be at Stitches Midwest soon, and we're really excited about that.
Right, and I just kind of wanted to break it down a little bit about the involvement that editorial does for our publications. Of course, Judith writes the book. Judith does the main pieces. But along the way, as you're trying to explain things and as you're trying to make things understood from a writing standpoint, there's stuff you got to do. And there's photographs and techniques that have to be done. And so, you know, there's there's Rigid Head of Looms warped up at Knitters Magazine, and lots of little things being tried and shown and illustrated. And I know that you're a big part of helping, always helping with the, how do you say it the best possible way? That's something you're very gifted at.
I consider that to be one of my strengths in the simple part of I'm extremely visual. And I can, one of my friends said, you see things in three dimensions. And I really do. I imagine things in three dimensions. So as we create a book, as we do things like that, I do a lot of the technical things. I don't necessarily go in and check the numbers and do all that because we have other people who are much more adept at that. I go in and I make sure that it makes sense as a consumer, as someone who doesn't really know what the end product is supposed to be. I try to go in kind of blindly and see if I understand what's going on. And that's where we decide, oh, we need photographs of this. We need a close-up. Well, maybe a sketch will do better. Maybe a diagram, whatever we need, whether it's a chart, a diagram, a photograph, a sketch, or a cartoon. I actually like the cartoons the most because that's what I'm most involved with. I draw the little cartoons and then we turn them on over to our production people and they do these beautiful, beautifully done graphic pieces for my little kind of immature cartoons. But I really enjoy that part because I get to draw, you know, I'm drawing little 3D figures and diagrams and then they're going in and turning them into real graphics that, you know, are suitable for the world.
Well, I think your drawings are pretty great. I mean, you sketch. One of the things I remember finding most interesting about you when I first came back to XRX about 8 or 9 years ago was that you kind of sketch all the time.
Yeah, even in meetings. I'm a doodler. But that's a trait in my family. My father does it. My grandfather did it. All of my uncles who are blood, my dad's brothers, all of them doodle. You know, when they're sitting at the table, idle time, they doodle. They either practice their handwriting or their signatures or they doodle. And I guess that's kind of part of it. We were brought up that way subconsciously, and it was in front of us every day. And so I do, in meetings, I'm always doodling as we're having a meeting. It kind of keeps my mind focused. It's kind of like people who say you can concentrate while you're knitting or knitting helps you concentrate. Doodling does the same thing for me as knitting does in that manner.
I just remember one day noticing it, and you inspired me. And I think I grabbed Molly, and we went to some store and bought everybody in the office a box of crayons. You already had a bigger box of crayons, of course. You know.
Yeah. I have that box actually right here on my desk now that I look at it.
So the book, of course, it's always a big push. People that don't know about the publishing world, it's a feast or famine kind of thing. There's moments of just long quiet while things are being worked on. And then, of course, there's always the end date, that drop-dead deadline by which you have to get something at a printer so that it can make a deadline like a TNA show or a Stitches show or whatever, always seems to rush up on you. And then it's all hands on deck. And I think we do frantic better than anybody else, don't you? I think that
I think we do it well. I think we do it very well.
I think we do frantic very well. And you've been a part of this process for so many times, and you always keep your cool. I've always been really impressed with the fact that, because you're kind of that special agent, that guy that they throw, okay, this is a hard problem, go solve that. You're not really part of that whole necessarily planning the long production cycle, you know, so those things are out of your control, but you always stay really calm about that stuff, Rick. It always has impressed me.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure that I'm always calm, but I try to be, you know. I learned a long time ago that losing your cool or you know, upsetting people, you only have to apologize for it later. And apologies don't always mean much after the fact. So it's easier to keep your mouth shut, go with the flow, deal with the frustration inside your head, and then that way you don't have to take time later to apologize for something that you shouldn't have said or shouldn't have done. I try to keep level, but there are times that, you know, I do lose it.
Rick, don't we all? I mean, really, yeah. We all lose it every so often. I mean, kind of the good thing about our organization is it's mostly, for the most sake, it is family, and so we tend to forgive each other for the most part.
Yeah, Oh, yeah. And I always used to joke from the stage that the best part about this company is we get treated like family. And the worst part of this company is we get treated like family. And it's really true. And we're a dysfunctional one, too.
I always say that we put the funk back in dysfunctional.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That is pretty much it. So at the same time, you were doing basically being the secret agent dealing with all the kind of the harder communication problems of the book. You're scrambling to put together a magazine. Of course, the fall issue is what I'm talking about, which is, it's a big magazine. It's one of the more complicated magazines. And it always seems like that's what happens to you.
Yes.
That while you're trying to prepare for your magazine and do your very best, because Rick's mandate, just so you know, Rick does a lot of different things. He wears a lot of different hats. But Rick's main mandate is to make sure the magazine gets done. He's the editor of the magazine. And that choice is not always his. And he's very gracious about it. He is. And, again, the people that will pull him away will also jump back in and help him get things back on track. But I looked at some of the stuff in the magazine. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful issue.
It's going to be a fun issue, a really nice issue. I'm real excited about it. We've got lots of interesting things, and I'm just really excited about what we've got going on here. We're still about 10 days, maybe 12 days from completing the issue to send it off to the printer. So we still have patterns to write and things like that. The stress level hasn't hit yet. And Sunday, we're going to start our photo shoot for this issue. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And folks, that's not atypical. I want to back up so people understand how this actually works. Rick and the editorial crew have to decide well in advance what is going to be knit, who's going to be knitting it, and what yarns are going to be knitting. And so there's a process where there's a lot of pieces in place. And so not having the pictures this close to deadline is actually not the hardest thing. It's where the patterns are that's the scary part, always.
Yeah, well, part of it is we work about three months in advance. Other magazines may work even further in advance than we do. We work 6 to 3 months in advance. This one, the garments have just come in. The finished knits from the different designers and their patterns have just come in the last 2 weeks. And we're quickly and diligently going through those patterns and making sure everything makes sense. I've got 2 pattern writers. I've got 3 proofers. I've got Elaine and myself and Karen here in-house that I'm not counting in those numbers that are also doing a lot of the same things. And that happens as I leave on Sunday, because Sunday through Wednesday will be our photo shoot. I will leave the office, but I will still have Elaine and Karen working on managing all those patterns coming and going from the pattern writers, the proofers, and everything. Everything will be going through production and being worked on as I'm gone. But I'll be actually helping create the visuals for the magazine, the photographs themselves. Styling has already been done this week. We're basically ready to go. It's just that we're waiting for our models to come to town, and Sunday through Wednesday is going to be the best time for us to work on that.
Right. And I want to explain also something that is a little different. Rick is one of the most hands-on editors out there. He is involved with the selection of everything, and he's involved with the styling. He's taking a look at these pieces. He's going through our massive wardrobes. We have beautiful, massive wardrobes for merchandising anything with anything. And so he's playing visual editor. He's playing stylist. He's playing editor, which is basically managing this shoot and making sure that, yes, I have that collar correctly, and oh, I need a back shot on that as well to the photographer. At the same time, he's worrying about the logistics and the management of the content itself while he's out in the field. Rick, it's just got to be enough to pull you in 5 different directions at a time. Do you ever feel like you're going crazy?
All the time. No, there are times that it's like, oh my God, how am I going to get this done? And there's an awful lot. There are times that I do feel overwhelmed, but that lasts maybe 15, 20 minutes. I'm not a list person at all, but I just kind of reprioritize what I do need to get done. And I just say, sitting and fretting about five different things isn't going to get me anywhere. I just need to decide which one is the first one that needs my attention, and I take care of that. I also am pretty, I think I'm pretty good at delegating. And, you know, I have a great support staff, and people should know that. You know, nothing is done in a vacuum here. I don't do everything. I do a lot, but I don't do everything. I've got Lisa, who does an incredible job making sure that everything I styled is ready to go. She's done all the behind-the-scenes things. We picked the models, and she does all the negotiations for me, things like that. Karen makes sure that I have my contact sheets ready for my photography. And Elaine is there making sure, checking that everything I'm doing is done. So she's my list person. I think she has my list, actually.
Yeah, Elaine and I are both list people. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, you have the great luck to work with what, well, I consider him to be the finest textile photographer in the world.
Alexi's amazing. I wouldn't trade his work for anything. Our staff, our photography staff, just gets along really well. We have our little blow-ups and we do whatever we're going to do. But it lasts all of 5 minutes and then we're back on track. One of the biggest compliments I think we're ever paid is when a model says, next time I work with you, I can't wait until the next time I work with you. Our models have no problems wanting to work with us again. That says something about the photographer. That says something about the crew. That says something about the way we treat our models. And I think, you know, we hire models from all over the U.S. We've done them from all over the world. And they're perfectly happy to work with us when they work with us. And they almost everyone has always said, you want to work with me again? Just let me know. Talk to my booker. And having Alexi as our leader when it comes to the photo crew, he's an amazing photographer. He knows what he wants. He listens. And he almost reads my mind and I almost read his mind. So it works out really well.
I've been on the shoots before. I try now, as you know, to stay away from them. But the synergy there, the teamwork that goes into that is really amazing. You do seem to be on the same page. And for fiber hooligans that are maybe mystified when we're talking about Alexi, we're talking about Alexis Xenakis, the other X in XRX, my uncle and basically founder of the company. And I haven't had him on the show yet. One of these days we're going to have him on the show because he's a kick. But truly, one of the most gifted photographers in the world. Yeah, it's fun. And so, are you looking forward to the shoot? You all ready?
I'm all ready, I think. I always say I think because it's my escape hatch. No, we're ready. We've got everything styled. I've got one little repair job I want to do on a piece, but other than that, I'm happy.
Well, let's talk about what's going to be in the magazine. By the time this episode airs, of course, the photo shoot will be over, and we'll all be heading to Stitches. This show is going to be airing the Monday before we head to Stitches Midwest. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But can we talk a little bit about what's in the magazine and who some of the designers are?
Sure. We're going to have a great cable section with the likes of Fiona Ellis, Penny Ullman, Kathy Zimmerman. We have a great dress and little bolero jacket set done by Adrienne Larson. She's a young lady from North Dakota who does these really incredible little pieces. And I won't say little, phenomenal pieces. Some of them are little, some of them are big, but they're all fine gauge knitting. And she does an impeccable job with her work. We're going to have a Chanel suit by Laura Bryant. Therese Chenoweth has a couple of pieces for us. One is a cabled jacket, bulky jacket, but it's lofty. It's a lofty fiber, so it's not a real heavy jacket, but it's big and cozy. And then she's done a second piece for us that is this great little button-up shell with raglan cap sleeves that is just adorable, and it's color-blocked with cables. And it's just a beautiful piece, a little fuzz, because we have a mohair carry along in that piece. Catherine Hunt has a beautiful slip stitch jacket. She's like the queen of slip stitches as far as I'm concerned. And she loves to do tweedy looking garments. And this one is, of course, done in a tweed yarn, three colors. It's a really pretty block pattern, zip up jacket with contrasting lapels. very much her signature look and her signature style of knitting. It's just a beautiful woman's jacket. Barry Klein has a piece with us, and it's a man-style cardigan, but it's shaped for a woman. It has beautiful feminine lines. It's got cables and textured checkerboard. We have a few accessories that are going to be quite fun, so that if people want to get ready for the holidays and knit great gifts, we've got that. I've got a beautiful triangle shawl that I created out of Fiesta yarns, two different Fiesta yarns put together for a really beautiful large triangle shawl. We've got a couple of cowls that are quite fun. One of them has slip stitches, has the texture work, and I've done a zigzag pattern with that. It's got a matching pair of gauntlets. I have another pair of mittens with a hat that is all done in Fair Isle by Lisa Jacob. There's another cowl that is, it's a long, lightweight cowl with matching little cuffs that could be worn under a blazer and look like you're wearing a surplus top underneath with little cuffs peeking through. It's really kind of cheat the eye design that's quite fun. And some other things that are just really fun. I've got Cornelia Tuttle Hamilton has done a great piece for us, and she's doing an article on how she works. And this piece is kind of on the signature look that she's working on right now, with lots of open work, like open boxes. Rather than lace work, it's more open work through stockinette pieces and texture release patterns on top of that. It's very cool. She calls it a painter's smock, and it's very, very painterly, very artistic looking garment.
And the cool thing about Knitters Magazine, and I know this is something that you take a lot of pride in, not only is it a teaching magazine with something to learn along the way, but it is completely self-contained. And I'd like you to talk about that to our listeners, please.
Yeah, the thing I like most about our magazine is it is a self-contained package, in that for every pattern that's in there, no matter what pattern you're talking about, if there's a technique in there, if there's a stitch, if there's a manipulation, if there is whatever, it is contained within this issue. We have the Knitter School in the back, which takes care of every technique from casting on to binding off, and I mean every technique in between. If there's something unusual or something special to a special pattern, a lot of times it won't be in that school. It will be right there with the pattern so that you don't have to flip back and forth. The other thing I really like is the pattern and the picture appear together. So you don't have to search to the back of the magazine to look for the pattern. We will have the continuation towards the back, but by then you've already established what's going on. Our charts are next to the pictures. Our schematics are next to the pictures and the instructions. All that is there for you to understand right away, as well as having the yarn, the name of the yarn, the yardage you require. We don't tell you how many balls of yarn to buy because we give you the yardage. Hopefully you can figure that out from the ball of yarn, which that also is contained on a yarn page in the back of the magazine. And the reason we do that is sometimes you may not be able to find a specific yarn, but if you want to substitute, it's more important that you get the same amount of yardage, not the same amount of balls, because different skeins of yarn have different put-ups and different weights. So the most important thing is that you get a yarn that is the right grist or thickness or weight, whatever you want to call that, and you get the appropriate amount of yardage. We also have gauge and everything right there as you see the picture. You know what you're looking at. You know what you're going to get as a finished product. Hopefully you get the dimensions on the schematic if you read the schematic, or you read the little icon that gives you the sizing that makes sense to you. We have gauge. We have everything right there in the pattern. It is self-contained. The only thing you don't get is the needles and the yarn, and maybe the buttons.
But we can help you find those, thanks to our wonderful advertisers.
Yes, our advertisers, and like I say, on the back, towards the back of the magazine, there's a page that gives you the yarn page. And at the end, we have a page of suppliers as well. We give you a list of where the advertisers' advertisements are, but the suppliers, we give you the yarn company, their name, a phone number or a website or both, and actually both in all of these cases. So you can contact them for the nearest retailer or how to get hold of their product. You know, we love the idea that we're working with knitters. We're hopefully working with yarn shops, and yarn shops are the livelihood of this whole industry as well. And so you go into the yarn shop and you can say, well, I'm looking for this yarn. And if they don't have it, hopefully they buy from that company and they can order it for you. The nice thing is check your local yarn shop. And if that's not the case, then you can contact the yarn company and they'll tell you who's closest or how to get it at your earliest and easiest convenience, I guess.
I like that at the heart of what we do, it's still very important to the organization to be LYS friendly. It's, you know, of course, it makes all the sense in the world for Elaine, who
was a yarn shop owner
for years. I like how we handle that. I like that we actually do a great job, I think, providing decent margin for yarn stores that want to carry our magazine. I think we actually do full Keystone, which I'm not sure is normal for local yarn stores. And folks, Keystone would mean 50% off. Sorry, I don't mean to be going all industry on you here. But I really do like that. And I like the business sensibility, but I like your personal sensibility with the designers, because you do a good job, Rick, of picking those people that have something to say and then allowing them to say it. And your way of dealing with designers is very different. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, okay. Well, that's for submissions, yes. When I create a theme for a magazine or I'm looking for something, like I've said before to other people, I could fill a magazine with designs any day of the week, the four designs. I know exactly what I want in the magazine, and I could pick 20, 30 garments to go in there out of my head. But that's not what my job is. My job is to find people who can submit other ideas. I don't have all the ideas in the world. And some of the most incredible ideas, of course, come from other people. I'm not saying I'm that brilliant. And so I will throw out three or four major ideas for an issue, whether it's a color story, it could be a theme, it could be, you know, it could be cables, or it could be, you know, reds and blues, or it could be a great wording like shift into summer and let people play with that, or, you know, race cars, even getting the theme. He's got a little red sports car. Picking the theme and then letting people run with it. Everybody's take on things are different. And so I give my designers kind of just very loose parameters, and I hope they focus in on something. And then I have a pretty good personal relationship with most of the people who design for me. Doesn't mean that if you're new and you want to do something that I won't look at your work, because I'm always looking for new and interesting and fun things. And the magazine has to have some cutting-edge things as well as some traditional things. So we work in that manner. Once I get my submissions, I go through them and I think of all the possibilities of what we're going to use, what we're not going to use, things like that. I might find a design and help the designer refine it a little bit so that it's more consumer-friendly. Because you can make the most incredible garment in the world, but if nobody is willing to put that much work into it, it's not worth making. So sometimes you have to compromise. And it's not dumbing down something. It's making something that's more accessible. You can do cables. You could do a sweater that is 15 different cables across, and each one could cross on a different row. But why would you do that? Why would anybody want to put themselves through that misery? Yes, it's a feat of strength and it's a feat of talent. But nobody wants to make themselves crazy just because the designer did. So we have a designer say, okay, you want to do 15 cables, maybe 15 won't work. Let's do 5 cables and let's make them all cross at the same place or in alternate places. Let's simplify the design. Let's get the look a little more cohesive. And we go from there. Again, some things I take directly from the designer. I always make them remit a design. In that if they send me something that is finished and says, I wonder if you want to publish this and I like the piece, that's usually not the piece I take. I say, yes, I love the piece and I would love to have it. But now I want you to remit it for me in a different color or in whatever. And the only reason that is that I want it to have the cohesiveness of what we're trying to create within the one issue.
And from that, we get things in that are surprises, just shocking. I've been there in the back when you've opened up and gotten stuff and go, oh my goodness, didn't even expect it. It's been, that can cut both ways, but oftentimes it's pretty pleasant.
Yeah, if someone has the latest issue, which is a summer 2014 issue, the K-115, the cover piece was like that. And so was, there's another piece in there, the little yellow camisole in that issue is one of those that is like, oh my God, we have to do it. And they're both kind of cutting edge. They're a little skin bearing, but they're not obscene. They're interesting knits and they're fun knits. They're not necessarily easy knits, but they're not complicated. We do gauge them as to the difficulty level right there at the beginning of the pattern. There's that sidebar that has icon for the fit and the gauge and the yarn and the needles and all that. But at the top of it, we have it labeled experienced, intermediate, beginner, beginner plus, intermediate plus, whatever the case may be. So that happens. But yeah, we get some real exciting pieces, some real interesting pieces, because there's a lot going out on in the world. And as much as I'd like to go out and search and find everything, I don't have time.
No, well, you do a great job, and I think the magazine's great. Not everybody is going to agree on all magazines, you know, what's the best magazine out there, but I'm still pretty fond of our magazine, and I know we have loyal customers that are too. Speaking for our loyal customers, we do have some news, folks. 4 years ago, we put our first issue digitally out into the market. It was K100, a special double anniversary issue that I think almost killed Rick. And we put it out as a digital issue through Zinio, which is available through the iPhone, the iPad, the Android, Mac, PC, Windows 8, and special double issue. And since then, we continue to publish our magazine via Zinio. But one of the things we found over time is that not everybody loves Zinio, that many of you would prefer an alternate to Zinio. So we have some big news with starting with this issue, the next issue, sorry, K116. The issues will become available on the Kindle market, the iBooks market, and the Android market. So we're going to be expanding, folks. You'll be able to get Knitters Magazine in your favorite digital choice from now on. It's going to be very exciting, don't you think, Rick?
Oh, that'll be great. Yeah.
Yeah, can't wait for it. So all you people, if you go up to knittinguniverse.com/digital, you'll see all of Zinio stuff up here. And as we have new links to the new formats, we will put them up there as well. So just wanted to drop a quick note about that. Looking forward to the issue. And this issue will unfortunately not make it to Stitches Midwest this time. Stitches Midwest is a little earlier this year, and we had a lot going on to get this done. But it'll be out shortly thereafter. But while I made that very clumsy transition to Stitches Midwest, Rick, let's talk about Stitches, because you have been the host of Stitches for a long time now. You ready to talk about Stitches?
Sure, I'm ready to talk about Stitches. I just want to say that the garments from this issue will be in the booth at Stitches. So the Knitters 116 garments will be in the booth. So the things I talked about as I opened the show, telling you who and what and where, those will be in the booth. Many of them will also be in the fashion show that we produce. But let's talk Stitches. Stitches is probably one of the most fun parts of my job. It's where we get to go meet with the public, meet with a lot of shop people, because we do have a great market, a lot of people in the industry, because we do have industry sponsors that come to the show as well. And we get to see actually what the public is knitting, what the public loves. You know, the centermost part of Stitches, of course, are the classes. For some of us, you'd say the market, because we like to shop more than we like to learn, but that's another story.
I don't think any of our listeners like to shop that much. I think
that's not a myth.
Yeah. Rick. That's a total myth.
If we close the market tomorrow,
it'll be fine.
Except me. Except I know my budget has changed. Yes.
So the first time you came to a market, you weren't a teacher. You just came as a market goer.
The first time I came as a student, and that was in Portland for probably the second or third Stitches that we had drawn. or the company had thrown. Yes.
That's exactly right. And I'd love for you to share your reaction upon walking into that market with the listeners, if you wouldn't mind.
It was in the Portland Convention Center. Huge, huge, huge display floor. You walked in and you were bombarded with yarn immediately. I mean, it was a color frenzy. And I was blown away. I think I might have gone down two aisles and I had to leave the room just to kind of get my bearings all over again. And, you know, so I stepped out of the market completely and just had to kind of go, okay, now I know what I'm in for. And I went back in and had a great time. You know, there was anything and everything. Knitting was there. Almost anything and everything. Fiber was there, except for sewing and quilting was not there. It was definitely a fiber show, not a quilting show or a sewing show. But it was amazing. It was amazing. And I'm probably a little more jaded these days just because I see it more often. But it's still quite an impressive thing. And the way the market has changed over the last, could it be 18, 20 years since my first visit, maybe even more than that, is amazing. It's been more than that. It's more like 25, I think.
Well, you're not the first person that has ever told me that their first time into the market, they had a little trouble catching their breath and just needed to figure out how to deal with being sensory overload. And you've heard that story, too.
It was sensory overload. Oh, yeah. Oh, I get it all the time. It's like, oh, my goodness. You know, yes, it's sensory overload, anything and everything, you know, and then we get people coming up going, I'm looking for, you know, and then they get then if they ask me, I get a glazed look in my eye and they're like, oh, he doesn't know anything. And then it's like, no, I'm actually Rolodexing trying to figure out if I've seen it here and where to send you. So yeah, it's crazy with over 200 booths at every show and, you know, 100 and some or 200 and some vendors in the room, you pretty much can find anything and everything you're looking for. And if you can't, you can find a great substitute for it.
Well, you know, it is funny too, Rick, because, you know, as the editor of Knitters Magazine, when you want yarn for something, you call a supplier and they send you yarn. That's just the way it is. And, you know, most of your knitting tends to be work knitting. I don't think you get nearly enough time for your own personal knitting, probably not. But I've seen you do some damage out there all on your own.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do damage every show. Every show I do damage. It's like, oh, you know, there was a time here in the office when just before we'd leave, we would all get together and we'd get exchange signs that said, put this in your suitcase. And on the top of it says, you don't need it. And we put those in our suitcases. And we'd get to our room, we'd open our suitcases, and those would go in the trash immediately.
That's great. So your role, of course, has changed. You know, when I think the first time I met you was in Oakland. You were a teacher. We were talking on the market floor. Since then, of course, you really don't have the time to teach that much at the show anymore. Every so often you teach, but it's pretty rare. And when you do teach, it tends to be either like an et cetera or just like a one class, but you're a busy guy. You and I play host at the show, and you and I have very different jobs. You actually work there. I just walk around and smile at people. But I would like to tell people a little bit about what you do, because you are incredibly busy. And almost from the time you get there, it's all about Friday night for you. So can you take people through what it is that you're doing?
Well, my foremost responsibility is to make sure people are happy at the evening event. And the evening events are the fashion show and the student fashion show. The fashion show is actually garments picked out of the market floor. And we usually have anywhere from 75 to 125 garments in the fashion show. So those are knits. They could be crochet. They could be woven pieces, depending. It's what's being displayed in the market. Those garments we get to see for the first time on Thursday when they start turning them in, and we take, all I'm going to say, 20 crates of clothing, support clothing for that, And we build a fashion show around these 75 to 125 garments that are turned in. And what I do for styling that is I have an assistant, and the two of us create an outfit for every garment that goes out on stage. I hire professional models from the area, whether it's Chicago, San Francisco, which is our San Jose show, Atlanta, when we did our Atlanta show, and models out of Atlantic City for the East show. And so we hire professional models who come in for the evening for the fashion show. Anywhere from 7 to 12 models come up, and we do a fashion show of those 75 to 125 garments, each one fully appointed from shoes to jewelry to create the look. And I have dressers backstage, one for each of the models, and we put on a fashion show that lasts anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5 hours. And it takes all of Thursday and Friday to put it together.
Well, it does. And so, folks, I kind of want to break this down, because he's still got to decide which 10 to 15 to 20 trunks of clothes and accessories we're sending from our stock. And we keep those things on stock to accessorize the magazine as well. So we're always collecting clothes so he can have the perfect skirt for a top. This is very different than a lot of other fashion shows that happen in our industry. I am not casting aspersions on other fashion shows, but most of the fashion shows you will see in our industry are whatever the piece is over black spandex. And so the need to get those pieces, say, on a Thursday and spend all day Thursday and all day Friday so that they can be ready, it takes a lot of work to make sure that it's styled and accessorized just perfectly. And I think it makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, I think it's amazing. I joke backstage with my crew, with my models, with my assistant. I joke backstage. I said, who else has 7, 8, 9, whatever it is for the night? Who else has 7 Barbie dolls to play with? Which probably isn't going to go well for a lot of people, but it's basically, I get to play dress up with, you know, I get to dress these women 12 to 15 times each for the evening and get to display what someone has given us to work with. And we get some incredible pieces. And it's just lots of fun. Sometimes there's challenges in that we can't match a color or do something, so then we have to play contrast or, you know, blending. But it's all a challenge, and it's actually quite fun.
Well, it is. And you spend a good deal of time. Christy collects all the information. Karen puts it all together into a brochure with type large enough so that people can actually read it while they're sitting there watching it.
Yeah, and in the meantime, I sit behind my desk and I do a commentary for each and every garment.
Right, I was going to say, you spend a lot of time writing, going through and writing and making sure that, you know, because sometimes you get, no, nobody says anything about it except the fiber and the designer. And you do a really good job of making sure you pep that language up or edit it down as needs to be. So it's really a well-done boost for the piece. And I know that our vendors and our sponsors appreciate the trouble you go through to make sure that there's good commentary with that.
Yeah, and every once in a while we have a screw-up. It's like anything else in life, you know. Every once in a while a garment may come out on the runway backwards or upside down or something, and that sounds hilarious when you're not seeing it. But every once in a while, you know, a garment will come out, let's say, backward. And if I realize it, I stop the show and we make sure we correct that so that everybody gets the full gist of what the garment is supposed to be and what it's supposed to look like. Those kinds of things, you know. And then, like I say, there have been a couple of times where we haven't caught our mistake. And unfortunately, we were sorry, but there's not anything you can do because it is live. It is a live show.
That's exactly right. You know, folks, when I'm recording Fiber Hooligan here, I'm going to be able to edit whatever we don't want out of this. But a live fashion show in front of several hundred people, it, you know, and Rick does a great job. I've seen him go, wait, and stop it. And he makes it into a joke. He turns the garment back inside out or turns it around or whatever he does and sends them back out. For the most part, he does. But, you know, it is unfortunate because there's always going to be mistakes. It's the nature of a live show. But I think you do a pretty good job, Rick. And I think that you and your co-host, which is normally Fontel Jones, have a remarkable synergy up there on the stage, just fun and energetic.
Yeah, I think we do a great job. Fontel's a lot of fun. She's pretty savvy, and she doesn't even get to see the garments ahead of time. She comes backstage about 6 o'clock because she works the market all day because she has a booth down in the market. But she comes down about 6 o'clock, and we run through. She looks through things. I've given her a copy of the commentary so she can at least study that, and she does a much better job studying it than I do. So she has, you know, she has questions on names or garments or things. She has them marked down, and we do a quick review of what's happening. We make our plan for the evening, and off we go. I'm not normally a script person. I have a real hard time following a script if I create it, because if I veer off a script, I have a hard time coming back to it, and I keep beating myself up trying to get back to it. So we try to play things a little more by ear. Of course, all the commentary is scripted, but that's a paragraph, and then we're done, and then another paragraph, and then we're done. But what we do on stage between the two of us is not scripted work. It's genuine live work.
And it feels like it's nice and organic, and you guys are fun. I mean, you're funny. People get a kick out of that. I mean, some of the most interesting things that have happened is when there's been screw-ups and you guys handle it. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, fun, because a lot of times the screw-up will happen, and I know who put it in, and I'm looking for that part of the audience. I'm looking, and they're just mortified. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, let me see if I can save myself. Let me see if I can save us. So it's like, just a minute. And then I do, and then I turn around and see. I mean, we had one I remember where I had a total, completely different garment than the description. Halfway through the description, I look up, and it's a totally different garment. And it's like, oh, no, we crisscrossed girls backstage. So I look to see what the next garment is like. No, that's the right garment. So I turn to the person, and the person in the stage, the person who put it in, is sitting there shaking their head no. And I'm like, what's the problem? It's like, we gave you the wrong description. And so would you come up and describe it? And then after it was all described, as the person walked off stage, I said, you know, that's exactly what I was going to say. And we saved it, ended up. And of course, sometimes those scripts are the best things that can happen to a garment, because everybody goes back to the booth to tell the person how funny they thought it was, and then they stick around and they look at things and they find something, and guess what? They get a sale, or someone wanted to enter their booth otherwise. So, you know, it's funny to see how just the exposure in a fashion show of a garment gives you the exposure to your booth and gives people a reason to come say hello.
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, it's funny. There's varying opinions between the vendors and the sponsors. There are vendors and sponsors that we have that they want to put as many garments as they can in the fashion show because they've seen it work. And then there are some vendors that think, yeah, I'm not sure I really think it works. And I kind of think, yeah, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't really actually think there's two ways to look at that. I think, yeah, it really does. I mean, it's a beautiful show. It's well merchandised. You do great commentary. I think the fashion shows, and you know, it's a very good deal, and it's a great event. You guys do a good job about it. Let's move to the next event, of course, that you're the host of, which is the student banquet and style show. That's a little more informal for you.
Well, it's totally unscripted.
That's a different thing, because you're not dealing with professional models, but you are dealing with some very, very proud, sometimes anxious or nervous attendees who really want to show off what they've been working on all year long. And it's pretty special, I think.
Oh, it's such a fun thing. It's everybody's turn to be on stage for 15 minutes, or maybe 5 minutes. It's probably more 5 minutes. 15 minutes would kill them. But to be on stage for 5 minutes and show off some of their work and share what they do. And it's so much fun to see what they've done. It's so cool to see the excitement and the originality. There are so many incredible knitters out there that do incredible things that you really can't imagine And they're coming up with, you know, we found some of our wonderful designers have come out of that student fashion show. Some of the coolest designs I've found have come out of that fashion show. It's just fun, and it's a great night of sharing. We start out with a dinner where the teachers get to sit at tables with some of the students, and they get to have a little bit of a rapport with the teacher for the early part of the evening. When the student fashion show begins, then we focus on something else. But it's a really fun evening, fun event. It keeps me on my toes, I'll tell you that much, because there are people out there who like to rib me along the way. So it's a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun.
And, of course, your co-host for that evening is Beth Whiteside. She does a great job of helping move things along, both the fashion show and the student banquet. It's prizes, prizes, prizes. Just amazing generosity from our sponsors and our vendors.
Yes, it's always amazing. In our fashion show, I'm going to backtrack to the fashion show. We will have, you know, there are many times when we'll have 100 garments in a fashion show. I'm using 100 as just a ballpark figure. And more than 33% of those are given away as door prizes, kits for those garments. Yeah, so you can go home and knit one of those things, and the kit is there, given to them. We do feature things from the magazine, and almost everything we feature out of the magazine is given as a door prize. And when it's given as a door prize, you also get the subscription to go along with it, so you're not left in the lurch.
No, and there's other prizes as well throughout the night. At the student banquet, of course, it's impossible for you to go and not get a prize unless you leave early. Everybody gets something. It's impossible.
Everybody gets something at the student. Yes, that's something we started a long time ago where everybody goes home with something, which is just a pretty cool way to end an evening.
So the both great events, and of course that brings us into Sunday morning where we're all just trying to recover and say goodbyes, do last-minute shopping. I've seen you do the shopping. I think your last official duty is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in the market floor where you do the big grand prize market drawing and give away some cash, right?
Right, and in that case, it's a collection taken up by all our vendors. We created this as a thank you, as an additional thank you to the students, and actually to the students and the market goers, because a lot of day trippers come just to shop for the weekend. And it's a way to say thank you one more time. So what we do is we have, as you make a purchase, you're given a gold ticket or a blue ticket, depending on which show we're at. And you fill out that ticket and you put it in the barrel. You do have to be present to win. But at 1 o'clock, we have a drawing, and that drawing gives away three cash amounts totaling about $1,200 to $1,500, depending on the size of the show, where we give three prizes, and that's given as cash. So you can go home and pay those credit card bills if you already upped them up. You can pay the mortgage if you spent the mortgage on yarn already, or you can go back and spend more money at market in the next 3 hours.
Which is the way that we'd prefer you to spend that money, folks, in case you win.
Yeah, you spend it any way you want. Some would say spend now, pay later. So
that's right. I mean, you know, if you win, it's free money, right? I mean, you know, you might as well go spend it on the market floor. We think that's a great place for it.
I've seen people walk out with spinning wheels and looms. They've been contemplating it, and then they win the money, and it's like, well, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to run over and buy the spinning wheel I've been looking at all weekend. And they walk out with the spinning wheel or the loom. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny, Rick. We're seeing a lot more spinning wheels and looms on the floor these days. It's definitely up.
Oh, yeah. Spinning is growing, as always. And weaving, we're hoping, will go, you know, a long ways. This new book should be a lot of fun. We are going to have Judith will be there demonstrating. We will have demos in our booth of weaving and warping throughout the weekend. So, you know, we're pretty committed to this new book as much as we are to the magazine and to the show itself and the fashion show and everything. I'm pretty committed to all that. I'm going to be running myself probably more ragged than ever, but I really think that people need to know how much fun weaving can be, how much fun knitting is. Whatever the case may be, of course, we do have, you know, for those people out there who are new to this and don't knit or crochet, We actually have Learn to Knit and Learn to Crochet at all these shows that we do. So we can make converts of your family and friends.
Right, and those classes are free. Get into the market and just sign up. They're free, and you can find out the schedule about that up on knittinguniverse.com/Midwest. I think you can even download the show book at this point. So as soon as this is all done, usually the way this works is there's a book production that has to happen before this, so there's a book out at a show, or there's a magazine production, and then Rick has got to get on the road and play host. And then we finally take him home. And Rick, I don't know if you're anything like me. I pretty much come home and curl up in a fetal position for a couple of days afterwards.
Yeah, I kind of come home in jail for a couple of days, yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Well, Rick, we're coming down to the end of the interview here, and you've been great. It's been great to have you on. We must not wait so long between shows. 60 shows is just, you know, far too long between having you on the shows. I wanted to ask, do you have any shout-outs that you'd like to make out to the audience or to the public today?
Yeah, I'd like to let people know that, you know, what I do at Stitches is not a one-man show. I have a lot of help, and that fashion show takes a lot of work, and there's a lot of backstage woman power going on. And I want to give a shout-out to my backstage crew, who consists of Ginger Smith, who is basically the person who helps me put all the ensembles together. Then there's all these great dressers, Edie Ekman, Sarah Peasley, J.C. Breyer, Gwen Bortner, Beth Whiteside, Debbie Radke, Kelly Nuss, Judy Rowe, Myra Wood, Cindy Craig, and Betsy Hirschberg. We have other people who come and help every once in a while, and I do thank every one of them, besides being great teachers and great sports and great support. They make me look good on stage, and I really do appreciate it. And a special thank you to each of them, and also a very special thank you to Fontel Jones, because she always makes going out on stage pretty easy, knowing that the two of us are going to work together really well.
That's very gracious of you. I appreciate you remembering so many of the people. Anyway, those folks work also hard. And for you dressers that have been there on occasion, no disrespect intended.
Yeah, no disrespect to the ones who help out occasionally, because they don't teach at every one of our shows. And
That's right. These are our core people that were sort of always there.
Yeah. And my mind isn't always working 100%.
Yeah. Well, whose is at this point, Rick? But so that was a great answer. Great that you remembered so many people. It's your class act. So the last question before we slide on out of here today, do you have any final parting words of advice for the fiber hooligans today?
They should start knitting more or weaving more or crocheting more. It never hurts to have a few thousand more people knitting, a few million more people knitting. So let's get with the program and let's everybody teach one more person to do it. Be a much kinder world if we were spending our time sitting down, knitting or weaving, than doing some of the crazy things that are going on out there right now.
Oh, I think that's a perfectly great answer. And so I'd like to thank you for being so gracious with your time. And I know that you are busily planning the rest of your day. I know you've got a photo shoot that you've got to deal with this weekend. Really do appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule. And I hope I get to see you before we actually get to the show together. That I'm sure we probably will see each other at least once. And good luck on the shoot, and thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Rick Bondragon, editor of Knitters Magazine. You can see Rick in person at Stitches Midwest later this week. And you can check out Knitters Magazine online at knittinguniverse.com/knitters. And that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Okay, you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
All I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Tammy.
How are you?
You just get tickled
yes,
by that,
I do.
Don't you?
It's just not me. It's so cool.
Okay. You are cool. You're the
Yay.
New cool.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm, of course, you know, spending the day packing because Stitches is this week.
Yes, I'm on the road.
And I'm completely freaked out. Yeah, by the time people hear this, you'll be on the road.
Yes, I'll actually be just about to your neighborhood.
Yeah, right. So this is the time delay thing. You guys are listening to this. And at this point, either probably Tammy and I have met or I've left and Tammy's just missed me. So
you're running away. Good plan.
Run away.
That's funny.
So isn't Rick great?
Yes. I'm really looking forward to being at Stitches event. And he did such an awesome job when I was at Stitches West with the fashion show. I'm really looking forward to that again because I'm sure it's new and exciting. Different fashion show.
Very different fashion show. Yeah, but you know, you are absolutely right. I tell you, and folks, I'm really not bragging. Truly, I'm not, because I don't have the talent necessary to pull this off. You know, I get up and I play the clown on the stage before these things, but the work, the merchandising, the writing, the styling that goes into what Rick and his crew do for that fashion show, it's simply astounding. I mean, I will absolutely say, and I understand it probably is not the most humble thing, it is the best fashion show in our industry.
I'm tongue-tied because I tried to describe it to people. Unless you're there, you don't get it. But when you're there, everybody speaks your language. Everybody's talking about fiber and creativity and imagination and color. And it just doesn't get any sweeter than being at these events.
Well, and we're so lucky, especially with Rick, because, you know, he's that guy that is technically proficient, but he's also funny. He can get up on stage and have some fun. And those shoes, you know, are amazing.
Hey, don't underestimate yourself. Somebody's got to introduce the things and get things rolling. MC is an important job.
I'm really not an MC. I'm a warm-up act.
There you go. That's important, too.
I'm okay to be a warm-up act. You know, that's what they do with people like me that don't have any real talent.
I'm really looking forward to Franklin's program, too, because that's kind of the subject of State of Hooligan. Here's the people with talent.
Okay, so let's get right into that. So this week you want to, I always look forward to your report, as you know. So this week you want to talk about Franklin and his talk on Thursday night for the registered attendees?
Yes. Now, what I know of it is that this is, the majority of the information is probably what everybody has seen at TNNA. But knowing Franklin and how he's constantly finding all the new, cool, vintage stuff, he's probably added a few more things for this presentation as well from even just a couple of months ago. The title of the program is Impractical Magic, The Other Side of Weldon's Practical Needlework. I don't know if you want me to read the description, but it sounds... Weldon seems like a pretty interesting person.
Weldon was a publishing house. And I have to tell you guys, okay, so here's the confession. I stole this idea from the plucky Shindig.
Oh, really?
I did. I stole it, Tammy. I was fortunate enough, I took a little time off, and Krista and I went over to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where Sarah and her gang were doing their Plucky Shindig. Really nice little thing. I never get to go to places where I don't have any official duties. It's wonderful, right? The more and more I do events, the more and more I love events that I have to go to where I don't actually have any authority, because then no one expects anything of me, and that's really becoming very attractive to me.
Well, I'm sure it opens other doors for you. You get to learn things for yourself as well, instead of just putting out fires all the time.
Exactly, because you don't get good at events unless you go to other events and take enough time to say, okay, that's something different that worked for them. I wonder if that works going to work for me. And a lot of the time you have to look and say, no, it won't. But a lot of the time you can learn something. And if nothing else, you know, getting to be around all those fiber artists that were just crazed over buying all that plucky yarn and doing the events, it was a good experience. And again, no pressure on us. You know, Krista and I got to kind of walk into these events, then walk out with no burden. I didn't have to meet with any hotel or convention center staff. We get to, you know, go quietly and have a drink and dinner uptown. It was great. But I have to say, I've always known Franklin was funny from reading his blog.
Yes.
But when he gave this talk, I think everybody at our table was crying, laughing. It was side splitting.
Cool. I'm looking forward to having a good laugh.
Well, you know, it's a funny, historic look at crafting in, I guess you would call it, post-Victorian England.
The impression that I get is, if we were to compare this with modern day, it would be a lot like yarn bombing.
I think it's more along the lines of yarn bombing with somebody who is also slightly out of their mind. I mean, you know, what I don't want to give his program away, but Weldon's sensibilities were very eclectic. And I'm going to use eclectic as the kindest word that I can say, but really, really very interesting. So I came away from the whole thing just absolutely enamored with Franklin and the subject, tickled, and still learned a ton of stuff about the history of fiber arts. How great is it when you can be informed and laugh at the same time?
There you go. I'm really looking forward to listening to this presentation. Thankfully, not sold out yet.
Well, I mean, Tammy, you've got an inside track. You pretty much have all access pass to everything since you're one of the VIPs there.
Well, I'm looking at the schedule for the rest of Stitches Midwest. The fashion show on Friday night is sold out. The student banquet and style show is sold out. Marley's pajama party, I don't think has a registration or a cost linked with it, so it doesn't show that that's sold out either. So this is one really cool event we can still get into if we didn't know we were going to Stitches Midwest. And get into and enjoy.
Well, and the cool thing about this one is that, look, you know, it's free. If you're around on Thursday and you've just gone to the market and you bought one class or a fashion show or anything, if you have a badge, you get to come to this for free. Just let us know so we have enough chairs. Please go up there and register just so we have enough chairs. But it's going to be a hootenanny.
Really cool. Rick has talked to us all about the fashion show. I do want to mention that I'm going to be at the pajama party with Marley Bird, trying to help her out and basically just being in the way, I'm sure. And then I'm looking forward to seeing everybody come and party with us in their pajamas.
It should be good. Are we having a podcaster meetup this time?
You know, I've heard of one, but I haven't heard any specifics about it. I should probably ask you, Benjamin, are we having a podcast meetup at Stitches Midwest?
Okay, how long have you known me, Tammy? When was the last time I knew anything about anything? That's what Molly and Mavis and Chris do. You're usually the one that tells me, oh, hey, remember that one thing. You understand that I'm at my core incompetent and don't know anything about anything.
Well, the nice thing about it is that so far I've heard a lot of people saying, we're going to have one, right? There is going to be one, right? So even if it's an impromptu one, I assume that we are meeting up somewhere at some point, and I will link that in the show notes before I leave.
Well, what we should try to do is I'll get on the Stitches Midwest board and start a podcast or meetup thread.
That's a good plan, too.
I'll do that. I'll do that. It'll be up before this episode goes up. All right, folks. So by the time you've heard me tell you that I'm going to do it, it will have been done. Because, again, we're doing the time warp again.
And I'm looking forward to meeting the podcasters that are going to be there because it's a different location than West. And so I'm assuming that there's different podcasters from the area that will be there too.
Yeah, it should be cool. And, you know, it's going to be fun. This is going to be a fun show. Of course, this has always been Halos of Hope's home show. And, of course, we got Stephen and Stephen there. We had Jenny King on. She's part of the opening day program. And pre-registrations are up. So I anticipate this to be kind of a bumper show, which will be good for everybody.
So much going on.
There's so much going on. We're going to be exhausted by the time we're done with this.
That's a good thing. That just means we'll sleep really well for a couple of days.
Yeah, I usually come home from the shows and curl up into a fetal position and ask people not to touch me for a few days.
But I'm looking forward to free hugs at Stitches Midwest, and I hope everybody comes to find me.
Oh, of course. Well, you're the real star of the show. I mean, they just put up with my interview until they get to you. You know that, right?
But don't tell Rick that. I'll be in such big trouble.
I think that's more of an indictment on me than Rick. Rick is far more interesting than I am.
You're funny.
Oh, you know, a funny look and everything. Okay. But all right. So, well, cool. Anything else you want to talk about before we jump off here today?
So safe travels, everyone. And happy adventures.
Yes.
Happy Monday.
Hey, safe travels. So, Tammy, of course, we're going to take 2 weeks off while we gather our wits and do some planning for future Fiber Hooligan episodes. So I will see you. We will talk to you in 3 weeks. And happy Monday.
Thank you. Happy Monday.
That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of R Fiber Hooligans Facebook page and moderator of R Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us in one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and allfreeknitting.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stewart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank Betsy Hirschberg and Kelly Lelos for dropping in on us today. I'd like to thank Rick Mondragon for being so gracious with his time and being so much fun on today's show. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. I'd like to thank Jimmy Beans Wool for sponsoring today's show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you in 3 weeks for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.